Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The first full weekend of college football kicks off tonight, and we are exactly 1 week out from the start of the NFL regular season. You love to see it, and we love to see you spending your morning and early afternoon with us talking ball here on the Lombardi Line as we welcome you into Hour 2 alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're coast to coast as always. Michael out there at NFL Films today once again. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Speaking of which, we will have the VP of Ops at this establishment, Mike Palm, joining us for the final half hour of the program. We will get the latest on all things Circa Survivor and Million Contest. Also go behind the book for all of these week one games. It's a no way, no doubt day as well, coming up in about 15 minutes. So get ready for that. But Michael, where we're going to kick off hour two, like we always do, with a little what's on Michael's mind. What can't you get out of your head this morning?
Well, we have a clip. I think we should play it first before I talk about what's on my mind, because John Lynch has finally gotten to the point where I've been for the last month. Go ahead, Elliot, roll the tape.
Was it communicated to Brandon's camp at any point, say, in the last week, that he would be expected to practice starting?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into our communication again, but, you know, there's, at some point you got to play.
Some point you got to play, Stormy. I've been saying that for a while. Football players play football. You want to get paid. You want to get your game check. Look, this being nice hasn't worked out at all for the 49ers. Come on in. Enjoy our wonderful buffet. Have a nice hotel room. Sleep well. You know, we'll tape your ankles. We'll give you the greatest medical care you could possibly have anywhere in the world. But don't work. At some point, enough is enough. Like, either you take the Cleveland deal. Adam Schefter was on Pat McAfee today saying that Cleveland's compensation and contract was satisfactory to his agent. Cleveland's compensation to the 49ers was satisfactory, and yet he turned that deal down. So, like, what do you want to do? Like, you just want to continue to create a problem? You just want, you know, I think what's happened here is if he signs a contract, nobody will be wondering what's Brandon Ayuk up to. Well, stop talking about it. I think he's narcissistic. Like, at some point, either you play football or you don't. I'm finally happy to see John Lynch say enough is enough. Somebody's got to stand up. Like, I know we are all so worried about, you know, being too politically insensitive. We're running a $9 billion business. Mm-hmm. And if one of your employees doesn't want to work, who's highly compensated, then you have to do something about it, or the rest of the employees are going to wonder what the hell's going on.
Well, that's why I'm just frustrated that this isn't over with, Michael, because you put it up perfectly that he has had these other opportunities. If it was about money, if it was about being paid what he feels he deserves to be paid, he could have taken a bag elsewhere. He wants to stay in San Francisco. He showed his cards. He put them on the table. We know that you want to be here. So just, it's not like they're tossing you pennies, right? Like, this is still a big deal that they are giving you. It's just not a Justin Jefferson deal, which if you think that you're Justin Jefferson, then your mind's not right.
Right. And if you think you deserve, then take the Cleveland deal.
Yes.
Look, money is money. It's green. It's going to be green in Cleveland. It's going to be green in California. It's going to be green in Ohio. It's going to be green in Santa Clara. It's going to be green. So if that's what your motivation is, and look, I don't begrudge anybody. Just say what your motivation is. Just say it.
Also, by the way, seeing through Twitter this morning, Brandon Ayuk not at practice yet again today after missing yesterday's first practice. Ja'Marr Chase with the Cincinnati Bengals, similarly not at practice today. Zach Taylor admitting yesterday he spoke a little bit too quickly on saying that Ja'Marr Chase was going to be back at practice throughout and expected to see him in week one, potentially not the case anymore. Which one of these players do you think is out on the field first?
Well, I think Ayuk has to be out on the field first, because to me, I would suspect the 49ers are going to be off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with their players. I think today's their last practice day. So the next 4 days, it's not going to matter. But when he comes in that building on Tuesday, either he plays or he gets suspended. One of the two. There's not going to be any leeway here. Either you're going to earn a game check, but we're not paying you a game check to have you eat our food and hang around and do nothing. You got to look your teammates in the eye. See, this is the other thing. Everybody wants the guy to make money. Everybody's rooting for him to make money. But there's a time when football players got to play. and you have to help your teammates, and you've got to do the things to help your teammates play. You just can't be sitting back there worrying about yourself. I mean, this is so selfish on his part. Either take the deal or get out. Like, you have options. You can't have your cake and eat it too. But the 49ers deserve some of the blame here too. They play too nice. I would have kicked them out of the building 2 weeks ago. And I don't care what the Chronicle would have written about. I don't care about any of that. I would have kicked him out of the building 2 weeks ago and said, look, dude, either you play football or you go somewhere else. You and your agent figure it out. But you ain't figuring it out in this building.
We know John Lynch is fed up, to your point. I'm fed up, but I'm glad to see that you're on board and you're maybe more fed up than me, which is nice to hear, Michael. I appreciate that. I need that energy today about this. Also, still waiting to find out what's going to happen with Trent Williams as well. Unfortunately, NFL Network insider Mike Garofolo said that there is not really much progress happening there. The best left tackle in the National Football League looking to be unavailable. Kyle Shanahan said that as of now, he's preparing for that week one Monday Night Football game against the Jets to be without both Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams. We've seen that spread continue to tick down. The 49ers only favored now at home by 3.5. Keeping it in the NFC, we got some news out of Philadelphia as well, Michael, that corner James Bradbury is expected to miss an extended period of time with a lower leg injury. Reportedly, according to Tom Pelissero, surgery is not required, but the injury involves a tendon and recovery time, approximately 6 to 8 weeks for Bradbury.
Yeah, well, look, Bradbury was not very good. He's not a corner. He can't cover anybody. When he got cut by the Giants, he was a zone corner. The Giants wanted to play man-to-man. The Eagles signed him to play man-to-man, and they barely got a year out of him. And then for whatever reason, the Eagles made a huge mistake, and they went ahead and signed him to an extension. It made no sense at all. So now they're upside down in the contracts. If you go look at there's two teams in the league that are basically paying on their cap on a credit card, the Saints and the Eagles. Both teams have a lot of players making the minimum salary in paragraph five. Why? Because they've taken their salaries and they've put it in the signing bonus and put voidable years on the deal so that they can lower their cap number. It's what the Browns just did with Deshaun Watson. You lower the cap number, you create some room. It helps you. Now, Deshaun Watson's cap number is going to be $75 million next year. Good luck with that. But the reality here is they've did that with Bradbury, and now they're upside down. They are like a house that the mortgage is way more than the house is worth, and they can't get out of it. So this is a nice little, you know, he's injured, we'll put him on IR, and nobody will ask about him, and very, very unlikely he comes back because he really can't play. Mm. And this is kind of a way to where the Eagles can get away without having to face the reality that he can't play.
And he has showed up costly in some big moments as well for them when they needed him. The Eagles, by the way, open up the season 1 week from tomorrow. They're a 2.5-point favorite against Green Bay in Brazil. The total in that game, 48.5. I also want to talk a little Jets here, Michael, because you talked a good bit about Hassan Reddick earlier in the first hour. I feel like this situation is just never going to end. Yet Joe Douglas says we're just waiting for him to show up. You know, once he shows up, we can get something done. He is just hemorrhaging money day after day after day. And those game checks aren't cheap.
I mean, it's the dumbest holdout in the history of football, Stormy. I mean, it's so dumb. I mean, they can't get anything done. I mean, like, he's lost so much money. Where's he going to go? How's he get it back? How's he pay it back? Mm. I mean, at this point, he's better off retiring than paying the fines. And they have no interest in redoing the deal. There's such a lack of communication. This is how this whole thing started. There was no communication to begin with.
I just don't know who's advising him that this is the way to go about it. And, you know, it's the Jets' fault in a big way, probably more than his, that he has been vocal the entire time about wanting a new deal. That's why he wanted to leave his previous spot in the first place. And the fact that they didn't have pen to paper or have a deal and an agreement set in place, this handshake deal thing doesn't work in the National Football League, and we're seeing it here. The Jets, again, opened the season against the 49ers. Their season win total this year, 10.5. And we've called them the ifers a lot this year because of not only the front office decisions and the head coach as a leader and all of those things, but injuries as well. Aside from just Aaron Rodgers, Mike Williams, apparently, Michael, will be ready and available for week one. How important is that for New York out the gates?
Well, I don't know what Mike Williams we're going to get, right? Do we get the Mike Williams from 3 years ago that was probably the best deep threat in the league? Or do we get Mike Williams who just can't run as well as he used to anymore? I think that's the fundamental question. Which one do we get?
Well, and that goes, I think, not only for Mike Williams, but like a lot of different players on this roster. Which version of him are we going to get? But if he could be another great target and playing opposite Garrett Wilson, who we already know is really, really talented, I feel like there could be some explosiveness with this offense. It's just that if factor again, Michael. There are a lot of smart people, though, at this network that really believe in the Jets this year.
Yeah, and I think there's good reason to believe, because what I've seen out of Rodgers, he looks really good. But they're going to hold their breath every Sunday that he's going to stay healthy. I think that's part of it.
We've been debating so much what a win would be for the Jets this season, right? Like, what ultimately is the threshold for everybody to be happy and keep their jobs at the end of the thing? I think they should just be happy if Aaron Rodgers lasts more than four plays. If he can get through an entire game, that's going to be a win for this Jets team.
No question. No question. I think, to me, that operation that he had allowed him to come back earlier. But the concern most people have with that operation is that it has a propensity to happen again.
Yeah, we'll take it day by day. I think both him and Kirk Cousins are guys coming off a serious injury, dealing with a little bit of age. How are they going to work their way back into the season? It's a huge thing that we're going to have to monitor. All right, hour two is kicked off. When we come back, we're going to get into a little no way, no doubt situation. We finally have resolve to a couple of the quarterback competitions and I hate that we even call them competitions. We've known since the onset and said firmly who was going to earn those jobs, but we will get into the thought process there and plenty more when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin yesterday officially announced that Russell Wilson will be the week one starter out there in Pittsburgh. Now, Michael, we all know just because somebody's a week one starter doesn't mean they'll be a week 17 or week 18 starter. No way or no doubt Russell Wilson will finish the season as the Steelers QB1.
No way. No way. I think it's too hard for him to really operate and play well. I haven't seen enough evidence that he can. He makes mistakes, and if he turns the ball over, you know, Mike Tomlin's got to look at his team and say to his team, you know, Justin Fields gives us a chance to win. They think Justin Fields could play. There's part of that locker room that believes in Fields. And if there's a little bit of mistakes by Wilson, he's got to make that move.
With that in mind, especially considering Tomlin also acknowledged that Justin Fields will be a presence in the offense with Russell Wilson as the starter, how short do you think that leash is going to be for Russ?
Well, I think if he turns it over, really short. I think it goes longer if he doesn't turn it over but doesn't make plays. I think there's opportunity where if he keeps missing throws or not making the right reads, that takes usually about 4 to 6 weeks. But if he's turning the ball over, it'll be a quick hook.
Another quarterback battle that has been settled is in New England, with head coach Gerard Mayo announcing earlier this morning Jacoby Brissett will be QB1 for week one against the Cincinnati Bengals. No way or no doubt, Michael, Jacoby Brissett will start more than half of the Patriots' regular season games this year.
No way. I think he's on a four-game leash. I really do. Wow. I think four games is going to be enough. And then I think they're going to go to Drake May. I think they're going to get this team the month of September to extend preseason. And then I think at that point, they'll make the decision to go to Drake May. Look, they have high hopes for Drake May, and they should. He looks good. And I think ultimately, they'll give him that opportunity.
And they are on the road 3 of the first 4 weeks this season against some pretty stout defenses as well in New York and San Francisco. New York Jets, by the way. They've also got Seattle and the Cincinnati Bengals those opening 4 weeks before things ease up a little bit against the Miami Dolphins, who defensively we're not necessarily sure what they're going to be. But Michael, is that the right choice, you think, to start Drake May still even that early in the season?
Well, I think they have no choice, right? If they're 0-4 and Brissett's turning the ball over, there's going to be a movement within the whole community. We got to play the guy. And I don't think Mayo is strong enough to sit there and stand by his convictions and say, look, it's not the quarterback's fault. I think it gives them a chance to, you know, refresh their team once they get the offensive line. But that offensive line is going to have a hard time getting structured right.
Oh, yeah. They're brutal to watch. And you, as evidenced by even the last preseason game where they're playing a Washington Commanders backup defensive line and struggled mightily and had penalties up the wazoo. The New England Patriots had 4 wins last year. Their win total this season sitting 4.5. Is a little bit of juice on the over, though, at minus 135. So apparently the book thinks they can get at least 2-5. Now, they are opening the season in Cincinnati against the Bengals, where they were as high as a 10-point underdog. We're now seeing it at 8.5. I imagine that line move is in large part due to the fact that Ja'Marr Chase hasn't been out there at practice. When this deal is going to get done, I don't know. But no way or no doubt, Michael, that when Ja'Marr Chase's deal is done, it will make him the highest paid wideout in NFL history.
No doubt. That's a no doubt. I think he will be the highest paid. I think he'll be slightly higher than Justin Jefferson. Now, here's the he's doing his deal a year earlier than he should. You know, and it's because they did a deal early with Joe Burrow. So I think that's had an impact on it. But for me, I think he will be. He deserves to be in that category near Jefferson. And I think they'll get him just a little bit over it. That's what they did with Burrow.
The one thing I still struggle about with this whole conversation is hearing Mike Brown's comments from earlier this offseason, where in it, what felt like the same breath, he's talking about Ja'Marr Chase and saying, we know what a special talent he is. We're going to take care of him. He's going to get paid. But also saying, that said, I don't think that it's going to come this offseason. Meanwhile, all Ja'Marr Chase has done is hold in, hold out, not be out there on the field now. Even when Zach Taylor expected him to be here and be available week one, we're not sure anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, right? At some point, you got to make a decision, either you play or not. Look, Mike Brown can easily say to Ja'Marr Chase, yeah, I've got you for 4 more years. You have a contract. You have to honor it. And he's, well, I'm not going to play. Well, okay, that's great. You're not going to play? Then retire. Then just retire and pay me back the signing bonus that I gave you. Yeah. Like, people think the player has a lot of leverage. Yeah, if you don't want to play, that's fine. Don't play. But, you know, you're not going to have leverage. Either you honor the contract. That would be like the team saying, well, we're not going to pay you because we don't feel like you're worth it. We'll cut you. Well, okay, there you go.
Yeah, it feels just like John Lynch's comments on Brandon Ayuk. At some point, you've got to play, which leads us to this next no way, no doubt, Michael. The question being, no way or no doubt, the 49ers will be without both Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams for their season opener on Monday Night Football next week.
I think they'll have Trent Williams. That's just my gut. I think they'll have Trent Williams, but I can't, you know, I would say no way that they'll have both. No way they won't have both of them. No doubt they'll have one of them. I'll say that.
Okay. I don't know if you can hear that in the distance, Michael, but I think it might be a hallelujah chorus. I would love, yeah. Like, please, God, let us get Trent Williams on the field for week one. I do not trust the offensive line without him. That left side in particular, so important. This is an offense that's predicated on the run. We need to protect Brock Purdy. I keep saying we again. I've got to get this out of my vernacular when it comes to the 49ers. I just can't help it sometimes. Let's talk a little college football here quickly. We got 21 games on tap tonight, a full slate of college football in week one across the entire weekend, which inevitably means we're going to get some upsets, Michael. We saw that already in week 0 with Georgia Tech and Florida State. No way or no doubt, at least one top 10 team will lose outright this week.
No doubt they will.
Really?
I mean, I just think I think the whole rating is all messed up. We saw it last week. I just don't think you can rate what you can't see. It's hard to rate what you can't see. The predictability, these teams have had so many different looks and changes. I think it's impossible. So for me, I think ultimately that's the case. You can't predict these teams that we think are really good are going to be good.
Okay. Which one would you say would be more likely? Is it Texas A&M, who's a favorite now against Notre Dame, who's number 7 ranked in the country? Is it West Virginia and Penn State? Or is it Clemson and Georgia? Which would be the most likely upset of the three?
I think West Virginia is the most likely upset. I know a lot of people that are playing West Virginia on the money line. That's how confident they are. I mean, look, Drew Aller's got a lot of talent. He's very inconsistent. You know, now look, they hired the offensive coordinator from the University of Kansas to come in and help. Kansas offense was good last year, so that could help a lot, right? But I think ultimately, you know, this Penn State team, which is good, but West Virginia, you know, they're playing down in Morgantown. And look, it's hard when Jeff Hostler's father was the head coach down there in Morgantown. That was a tough place to play. You're not getting a lot of calls down there.
Yeah, I noticed that Elliot on the graphic didn't put a Western Kentucky and Alabama upset. It's okay. I understand. You know, you got to pick your moments.
But, nor did he put the Missouri getting upset either. He's going to avoid that.
What's that spread now? Like 42, 42 and a half, 46. Whew. Yeah, don't get me started there. This is fun. We got one more interesting one, Michael. I don't know if you saw this from Broncos general manager George Payton. He was asked if he thinks Zach Wilson has starter upside still. His response, no doubt he has starter tools all over. So no way or no doubt, since he's stealing our words here for this segment, Zach Wilson will become a starter in the NFL again in his career.
I would say no way, because I'm not sure anybody's going to buy into him like they have. They're selling right now. And look, I got to be honest. I mean, George Payton's history of evaluating quarterbacks after the Russell Wilson fiasco isn't very good.
That's a good point. I do appreciate Sean Payton's comments on Zach Wilson, though, saying, hey, my job is to try to get you to make money again in the future down the line. So we'll see if Zach Wilson can do something. I liked the phrase that he said he has starter tools, because we have seen moments with Zach Wilson.
He
absolutely
does have starter tools. Mm-hmm. Whether he has a starter demeanor, the demeanor is the problem. He doesn't have a starter's mindset. It's too many games. It's too hard. You can play good in one game. It's hard to have you got to be relentless. You got to be willing to really grind your teeth. Now, maybe he'll learn that as he matures.
And you've said a few times about him and a handful of players, notably earlier this week when we were talking about Kadarius Toney. There are some guys that you just question their love of the game.
Their love of the game. Yeah. I don't know how much he loves the game. Now, he's probably been rejuvenated by being around Peyton and being coached really well. But that being said, it's still going to be hard.
I like the combo of revitalized and rejuvenated, that rejuvenized. Although, does that sound too much like euthanized? I don't know. The wordplay is getting to me today. Hopefully, Zach Wilson's career is not euthanized. We, on that note, are going to hit the break. Fun stuff as always, Michael. When we come back, final half hour of the program, VSIN host and VP of operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, Mike Palm, will join us on the desk. We'll talk contest strategy, and of course, Palm's pressing three. I should just be cut off from commentary at this point. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome you back into the program. Mike Palm on the desk with us, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, the D, the Golden Gate, all the things. We're going to get the latest on all things Circa Survivor, Million Contest, talk week one lines in college football and the NFL. And of course, Palm's pressing three coming up in 15 minutes. Mike, how are we doing today?
Great. I mean, it's Stormy, look behind you and all the booths that are very actively engaged with players and their proxies, getting them signed up for both contests. So it was a tremendous contest sign-up weekend that we had last weekend. I was kind of down on Millions. I thought it would backtrack a little bit. You know, we did 4.7, short of the 6 2 years ago. We did 5.2 last year. I said I thought it would come in at 5, that Derek would have to kick in a whole $1 million this year. But after the surge last weekend and seeing the pacing here, I think maybe we'll do better than last year. Perhaps 5.5. Maybe we can get that overlay down to $500,000 for day. I don't think we can get to 6 million, but it was positive. And the Survivor, you know, this time last year, as we entered with 10 days left to sign up, at that same point, we had 5,800 survivors. And now we're at almost 8,400. So think about that. You know, you're 2,600 up. You're, you know, over 35% up. Maybe we do blow through the 12 million mark in Survivor.
Mike, you gave a great stat on the documentary about the Survivor thing where you talked about 73% 2 years ago were eliminated from the contest after week three, and 74. Everybody was making a big deal about Jacksonville eliminating a lot of people. But after 3 weeks, three quarters of the contest is typically gone. What's your advice this year?
In the pressing three, I'm going to ask you the same question. I know you don't look at it, but the third question is going to be life on the line. Who do you use Survivor week one? Because I don't know if I get a chance to ask you before that goes off. So for me, I would use the Bears in week one. Because I believe in the Amal Shaw rules. I really do. That you don't use divisional games and you don't use road teams. So if you keep that in mind, I think this is one of the better spots for the Bears. You're never going to use them in their division. I mean, maybe Minnesota's bad. I'm not sure. I think Darnold will be better than people think, and I think they're very well coached. The other two teams are juggernauts. You're getting a Tennessee team with a new coach, new running back. I'm not sold on the quarterback. And I just look at week two of the preseason. I watched that game. That was a national game. Those fans at Soldier Field acted like that was the NFC Championship game. I mean, there's so much excitement that they have this dynamic offense now. I mean, they're calling Caleb Williams the greatest Bears quarterback. He's not played one down.
He hasn't started a game.
He hasn't played one down. I think it'll be a really good atmosphere there. I'd take a little bit of a chance, and I would use him. I stay away from Cincinnati. Everybody's going to be on Cincinnati. You got to zig when others are zagging. I don't think just trying to follow the consensus is the way to go here. And I'm a little concerned about the talk about Burrow and the way the ball comes off his hand. And how about this Chase? Everybody wants to talk about Williams and Ayuk. Maybe Chase is the bigger story. And then he sat out again. And I would be very wary to step into that game in Seattle between the Broncos and the Seahawks. I know that's a trendy pick for Survivor Week 1 is the Seahawks.
So while we're discussing potential teams, any thoughts on Miami? Because that's at home. It's not a division game against a Jacksonville team that kind of crumbled at the end of last season.
I'm higher on Jacksonville. Okay. I think Jacksonville, you know, forget. They're a 97-yard Chad Henne drive away from beating the Chiefs in Arrowhead. And they're 6-3 before the 49ers go down there, and then they just crumbled, right? I think they get a fresh start here. I think the team is better than what everyone remembers, because everyone remembers them choking off the division. And I still am concerned about the culture in Miami, Michael. I mean, they celebrated Vic Fangio leaving. Tua wants to take shots at Brian Flores. It seems like anybody who wants to be an adult in a room, they don't want any part of down there.
Yeah, no question. I agree with that. Look, I think Jacksonville's better than people think. I think that the first games are hard. I think this will come down to a field. I don't want to play a game in Survivor that's a field goal game one way or the other. Who has the ball last? I think, to me, go back to really good handicapping. Who has the better quarterback? Who's playing home? I think it's as simple as that, right? Who has the best quarterback and who's playing home?
Also, just because you talked about like Tua's comments and kind of dysfunction there, I thought it was really interesting last week. He had this golden opportunity when he was on the podium to hype up his offensive line. He was asked about that group in front of him. And instead of doing that, his answer was, well, I can get the ball out fast, so it doesn't really matter who's in front of me. And you're like, I don't know if that's right. So you did mention, though, with Circus Survivor, that the countdown, you know, there's still a little bit of wiggle room here for people to still get involved. When is the final day that people can sign up?
So a week from Saturday, and the deadline is 2 p.m. Pacific. But I tell people, if you're coming from out of town, the proxies have like no appointments left on Friday and Saturday. You want to really get in here earlier in the week. I mean, now is the ideal time. You're a whole week out, and they still have space to put people in. I did talk to two proxies here because, you know, the buzz is about the documentary, obviously. In the documentary, you're a huge part of it, Stormy. You were there hiking in Tel Aviv in one scene. I thought that might have blown the budget, but
we had a drone.
Yeah. I talked to several proxies this morning because I came in early, and they said, we're getting people reaching out to us on Twitter or phoning us saying, I saw the documentary. I want to get in. How do I get in? So that's good. I thought the timing was really tight. Like, would have been more ideal if this was released mid-July to create this stir, but it is having an effect.
Which, by the way, real quickly, that final episode, episode 5 of the 5-part docuseries coming out later on tonight. You can watch it on the VSiN Live X channel on YouTube TV, VSiN.com/Survivor, where you can find a little bit more information about this. And you can watch all of the episodes on demand as well if you haven't had the opportunity to catch them live.
Mike, let me ask you this. The Millions contest, you know, as you look at it, those numbers, I mean, where do you think Seattle will end up next Thursday with Denver? Where do you think the Rams will end up next week with Detroit? And where do you think the game, the most important one, which is Tennessee-Chicago, which I don't understand how a rookie quarterback's 4.5-point favorite against anybody, but where do you think those three end up for the contest?
Good questions. I think that eventually the Seahawks will end up at 6. These are my guesses for the contest numbers, right? Because we got to put those out Thursday morning. And I know you, Michael, use those as a barometer in handicapping how you would bet cash over the window. The Bears, there's a lot of Chicago love, Michael. We're close to going to 9 to their win total. I mean, that's how much love is on this Bears team and how well they did in the preseason and that hard knocks. Bump that teams get. I don't know that number's moving. I thought it was probably, if you would have asked me a couple months ago, 3.5 maybe, but now I don't think it goes down. I think it probably sits at 4.5. And then the other game, Detroit and the Rams, my best guess is it lands on a flat 3.
So as far as college football goes, we have week one kicking off tonight, 21 games. I know there's been a lot of attention on that North Dakota State Colorado game coming up later on tonight, but a great slate of action throughout the weekend. What are some games here that people are playing more heavily or any that you're particularly interested in?
Well, the two games tonight are the Colorado game, and they're going to continue to get action because the prime is a story, right? And this is kind of a good storyline clash too, right? Between a dominant FCS versus Coach Prime. The other game, Florida and Miami, is a very important game for both those schools. That's getting good action. They're betting A&M. I mean, they're just pounding A&M against Notre Dame, which I guess, I mean, Elko would know Riley Leonard's weaknesses. Plus, that's an environment that Kyle Field, that a team like Notre Dame never goes and plays in.
100,000 people.
It's a very different going. They play that ACC schedule. I guess Clemson might be the most partisan thing because usually when they're playing Southern teams, it's neutral site games. They don't have to go. This is a true hostile road game for them. So that's been bet up to 3, and it's actually 3 leaning to go to 3.5. I don't know if it gets there. Those are the top games. And, of course, the game we have here at Allegiant. If you go by what I think the crowd will be, I think this will be a very partisan LSU crowd at Allegiant. And we're having two big parties. So we're having a party at Stadium Swim on Friday night for LSU. And Sunday morning, well, it's like 11 to 2, a pregame party for USC. The USC party has 350 RSVPs. The LSU party has 1,500 on Friday night.
So it's an interesting it's an interesting dynamic. LSU travels everywhere for every sport. I feel like they always come out. But then you have USC, who's right down the road. It's so easy for them to get here.
It's easy for them, but is it a big deal? I mean, is it a big deal if you live in LA to go to Las Vegas? Because you probably do it many times a year because of the short drive. I think for teams that are far away, it becomes a bigger deal. Like for the Wisconsins, and it's just a big thing to make a Vegas trip out of it.
Plus, I'm curious how people are feeling about USC in general this year. I heard that there's not a lot of love lost there for Lincoln Riley out in Southern Cal right now.
I'm not sure, but do we get this game again in 3 years? It's on a 3-year cadence, Miami against Utah. Will this be Mormons versus convicts? Because this is beach versus bayou. They have nice taglines for this thing.
Mike Palm is getting the t-shirts ready. Michael, we got Palms pressing 3 coming up next. Get ready. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, let's see if Mike Palm can go 2 for 2 today. Had an epic no hyperbole on Follow the Money this morning. And now time for Palms Pressing 3. Let's go.
And we like to go out in style. All right, Mike, I'm going to go down memory lane again. And you can correct me if, you know, my memory is wrong. But when Bill Belichick turned Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator turned failed head coach, back to defensive coordinator, into an offensive coordinator to tutor Mac Jones, I think, if memory serves me correctly, you were generally positive about that move. Of late, when listening to you, you've been somewhat critical of the hiring of Alex Van Pelt to tutor Drake May. Am I correct in that assumption? And if I am, what's the difference?
Well, I wasn't positive. I think Stormy will verify that. I was always concerned about that decision, especially as it related to him coaching the offensive line, which has been the problem the last two seasons in New England. They've had no line coach, whether it's been Matt or Adrian Clem. That has been a disaster. This year, to me, my registering of a complaint towards Alex Van Pelt is simply about Mayo. How do you turn around and run a $9 billion organization and be the head coach and say to everybody, well, you know, I've turned everything over to Alex Van Pelt on the offense. Where's your role? Where's your decision-making within it? You can't just do that. You got to be able to have the ability to run the offense and be a head coach and do what you need to do. So, look, Alex Van Pelt, I have nothing against him. He got fired in Cleveland last year, and now he got a battlefield promotion where he's the head coach of a $9 billion. It would be like Xerox saying to some middle manager who's selling computer machines out of the back of his Crown Vic that we're going to make you the president of the European division. That makes no sense at all. It doesn't. Like, I got no problem Alex Van Pelt coaching Drake May, but it's got to be within context. It's got to be how we develop them. And then as a head coach, the assistants work for you. They don't work alongside of you. Do you think Bill Walsh told Bob McKittrick, you just run the line, I don't care? Of course not. Tell me when this works. It never works. So that's where my complaint is. And I think that's been the disrupted. Look, when Josh McDaniels was there, Mac Jones went to the Pro Bowl. He won a playoff. He went to the playoffs. He didn't win the game, but he went to one. And it's been downhill ever since.
Do you think that with all of the assistant coaches that are out there in New England, that there could just be a general too many cooks situation out there?
Well, I mean, first of all, Stormy, that's a great question. And we had a Daily Coach community call yesterday and we talked about it. Mayo's never been a leader before. He's never been a coordinator. He's been an assistant linebacker coach. Now he's in charge of 25 assistant coaches. There's not enough meeting room space in the New England offices to have a staff meeting, which they don't have anyway because there's no room. And, you know, when Belichick ran it, it was a small, tight, universal group. But to me, it's hard to lead 25 people. It's hard to get all that. I think they're headed for a disaster. I just don't see any positivity. I'm going to make a decision on the quarterback. You know, listen to his talk out of both sides of his mouth. He's trying to make the media happy. Now, he's got a beautiful runway. No one's going to criticize him. He's very friendly with the media, which Belichick wasn't. So he gets a great advantage from there. But I think we know, you know, if the media likes you or the media wants something to be successful, they won't come down as hard on you as if they don't like you. We see that in all fields.
All right, question two, Michael. Reports are that Cam Ward is getting paid $5 million or more for taking his talents from the Palouse to South Beach as a quarterback of the University of Miami. Here's a question in general, not just specifically to Cam Ward, but in general. Will compensation at the collegiate level in any way affect the way pro teams evaluate and draft players?
No question. Now, but here's the real impact, Mike. Here's the real impact. Money like this is going to take rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7 and dilute them. Because what's happening in college is when you're making X amount of dollars and you're going to be a 4th, 5th, or 6th rounder and you're making more than that by staying in school, why wouldn't you stay in school? That and this draft here was the first draft. We've had COVID drafts, which were horrible. This is the first draft where these late round picks – fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. The Saturday picks are really the 150 players are not involved in that draft. So it dilutes the talent pool because those kids stayed in school. And the fact that kids are getting paid in school and, you know, now they don't have to come out early. We're going to get older players, which is better, but we're also going to get guys to stay in school. When before they were saying, look, I got bills to pay. I got to take care of things. I got to go. If I'm a fourth rounder, great. If I'm a sixth rounder, I'll take it. I just got to go earn money. Now they don't have to say that. And you could keep guys in school with this $15 million of player pool that most of these schools are going to have. You're going to be able to give them enough money to where, why not stay in school? Why not hit the frat party on Friday night? Why not have Saturday nights to myself? You know, I'm still an amateur, but I'm playing a pro game.
Yeah, you get money from the university. You still have NIL opportunities. You get a degree if you stay for a certain length of time. There's certainly benefits to it.
Michael, I'm gonna call an audible here.
Ooh,
I'm not gonna ask question three. Question three is gonna be who'd you take in Survivor? We can get to that. I'll leave you time to give a brief answer on that. But you've made a strong case, and I don't know if everyone's listening or wants to listen, about some reasons for regression with the Ravens, including Tucker and his declining stats the last 3 years. Now, longtime defensive line coach Joe D'Alessandris, who took a leave of absence due to a medical issue, passed away. Now, they had hired another D-line coach because they knew he was going to be out an extended period of time. But that's a totally rebuilt defensive line. How impactful will Coach Joe D's death be on them this year?
Well, I think Coach Joe D did a great job, and he had a lot of moving parts. You know, he's got it was going to start at right guard, Rosengarten, who he, I'm sure, was instrumental in being part of the draft, right? And they're changing up their whole offensive line. And then they bring in George Warhop, who was in Cleveland. He's bounced around a lot, but he has no vested in these players. And I know George really well. George is a strong, opinionated guy. And he feels like if I'm coaching the line, I'm entitled to pick who I want to play. I'm entitled to do what I need to do. And that's typically not what happens. I think that's a huge effect. I think it's going to take some time to compensate for the loss of a great line coach. Those things are hard to find. Offensive line coaches are worth their weight in gold, because if they find one young player that's picked in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round, you get you get 4 years out of them at economic value. That's worth a ton. You get one free agent to start it. David Andrews started the offensive line for us in New England. That's worth $5 million. Somebody should be writing a check to the person who found them to compensate them for that deal. So this is another one of those. This coaching staff losing McDonald, losing Coach D, which is unfortunate, and my sympathy goes out to his family. He had just lost his wife, I think, 6 months earlier. So this has really been a hardship for him. And unfortunately, now George Warhop comes in and doesn't have a feel for the players, doesn't understand their history. He takes over a group, and he's probably saying, wait, I don't think Rosengarten should play here, or Falula should play here, or Linderbaum. You know, it kind of disrupts things. It really does.
All right, we'll get to that question. I'm leaving you a minute and a half, Michael. Life on the line. All you have one entry. You're going to try to get through Survivor and win $12 million. Who are you using in week one?
One entry, Michael. Just one.
I'm going to take Cincy. I'm going to take the home team. I'm going to take the better quarterback. Now, look, I realize they're 0-4 the first 2 weeks, the last 2 years, but they changed how they're playing. They're playing much better defensively. I think that their offensive line will play much better, and I don't see how the Patriots are going to score a lot of points. I think Lou Amarillo will cause some problems for them. I think they'll get the lead, and I think that with Burton, and they still have T. Higgins, I think they'll be fine. Will it be closer than 8.5? I don't know. Would I take the spread? I don't like the Patriots at all. My second choice would be the Chargers.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard, but Michael is not particularly high on the Raiders. I want to see what this Chargers team looks like a little bit, though. But I think you're right, Michael. If you only have one entry, I know we want to zig when others are zagging and all of that. But if you only have one chance, one opportunity, isn't that where you feel the most confident?
In Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Not really.
I
bet them to win the Super Bowl. I don't want any part of them in this week one.
Me too. This whole week, though, is brutal. Like, I look up and down that week one slate. There is nothing that I just look at and say, oh, I love this matchup. I love this team.
I don't love it
and
at
Monday
all.
Monday morning, we're all going to say, why didn't we take that team? That was so obvious.
I don't know how you pick five games against the spread in week one.
Yeah, millions is going to be chaotic, to say the least. I know there are some people, though, that look at the Patriots schedule and just say, I think I'm going to try to fade them as many weeks as I can.
I saw somebody tweet that today. You get your first eight picks in eight weeks by fading the Patriots every week. How many Survivor entries are you going to wind up with?
So I have two already, but I think I'm going to add another one before the deadline.
Michael, thank you. It's been a fun five years. South Point at Circa. Good luck.
Michael, you're the man. Appreciate you as always. Everybody have a great day. Sharp Money and Patrick Maher is coming up after this.